recent passage of the Bipartisan Explore Act, exploring public lands through outdoor recreation experiences, the American Outdoor Recreation Act, which is waiting in the wings still in the Senate. You know, they basically reinforce all the things that we're already doing. And that is, you know, really trying to, you know, meet, you know, rise to the occasion and meet the demands of, you know, the increase in outdoor recreation participation as a result of greater visitation, you know, increasing population in the Rocky Mountains, with you know, trying to improve access, improve the infrastructure to handle, you know, the amount of people that are visiting their public lands these days, and knowing that we can't really do that without, you know, a lot of partnerships, which is what, you know, I would say is what we're known for really in BLM or Colorado, is just how many great partnerships that we have. And, you know, we've got the San Luis Valley Great Outdoors Coalition, and we're part of that. And, you know, that's kind of the umbrella organization for all things outdoor recreation and conservation in the San Luis Valley. Having all of those partners and being informed by our communities and being engaged with our communities, I feel like we've got, you know, we're on a good path to be successful regardless of who's running the show, you know, higher levels.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Outdoor Citizen Podcast. This is episode number 50, kind of a milestone episode, don't you think, Owen?
Yeah, I would agree.
So your host today, Marty Jones, and I'm joined on the podcast this morning by Sean Noonan, who is the Bureau of Land Management Outdoor Recreation Planner for our SLV field office. As always, we want to thank Don Richmond for the music that you hear during this podcast, and Daniel Boyce for the sounds of the bird. So welcome, Sean. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So we understand Great Outdoors Colorado awarded a $353,000 grant to Canoas and Costilla counties to help install interpretive signage and add a concrete boat ramp to access the Rio Grande at Lobatos Bridge. Could you tell us a little bit more about the Lobatos Bridge Education Outdoor Project?
Sure. The Lobatos Bridge Outdoor Classroom and Recreation Enhancement Project has been something that's been considered for decades, really, and we're finally getting to that point. As you alluded to, we've garnered all the funding that we need to implement this project to its fullest realization, and we're pretty excited about that, but we've been working on it in some way, shape, or form for decades now, but in the last several years, we've partnered with an organization called the Great Outdoors Fund, and that they've helped orchestrate a lot of the fundraising capacity that we don't necessarily have ourselves in order to, you know, get this project fully implemented. And so we're coming up on that. The Great Outdoors Colorado Community Impact Grant was just received, and that was the major chunk of it, as you said, $353,000 from the Colorado Water Conservation Board and the Rio Grande Roundtable. We received another $102,000, and that's specifically for that boat ramp and also other signage related to the water resources and things that are of interest to them. So those two pieces falling into place here in just recent months have essentially guaranteed that we now have all that we need in order to fully implement this project. And so we're going to actually start that very soon with the very first thing, and perhaps maybe the most important thing occurring here in February, which is the installation of a vault toilet.
So, oh, yeah, that is pretty important.
First things first, right? So, yes, that's exciting. We've got lots of moving parts. Again, TGOF, the Great Outdoors Fund, is kind of marshaling all of these partners. The applicants for that GOCO grant were, as you said, Canoas and Costilla counties. So critical partners, and that's really the hallmark of this project overall, is just how many people and organizations have come together to really make this happen, to realize it.
On which side of the river will all the signage and things be, on the east or the west side?
So it'll be on the west side of the river. located on BLM lands and on the south side of County Road G right there. So that southwest corner from the Lobatos Bridge itself.
And how do, for people who don't know, how can they access the Lobatos Bridge? How do they get there?
Well, the two easiest ways, depending on which way you're coming from, is if you were at Antonito, County Road G is your access point there, and there's signage from there. And then from the opposite end, from San Luis, it also ends up being County Road G, but it just winds its way to the Lobatos Bridge, and right there on the river is where you're going to find all of these amenities.
So can you tell us a little bit more about the signage and the expected installation timeline?
So, you know, this is part of the Rio Grande Natural Area, and that area was enacted by Congress, or designated by Congress, I should say, in 2006, and it identifies several values that are important to this place, and one of them is education, and it's an area that's been used by several school districts, you know, both in Canales and Costilla County, as well as even Adams State University and other areas and organizations that travel to visit the place. And so the idea of it being an outdoor classroom really resonated with the Planning Advisory Council that was required by the Act itself. So it's been identified as a place that's important for, you know, educating people, and so many stories just so happen to come together at this very instrumental place. And, you know, it's at the mouth of the Rio Grande Gorge. So it was like kind of the first place that people could cross the river, and it's got this long, amazing history. And so the outdoor classroom is made most obvious by these 14 interpretive panels that we're currently finalizing. And really, the concept goes back to there's really a story in every direction. And so we're exploring, you know, these incredible stories that go back from, you know, how the actual, you know, land itself was formed, the ancient San Luis Valley, millennia of Native American inhabitation, exploration and settlement from Hispanic peoples for centuries, followed by Americans. It's really like a story about almost every aspect of the natural and cultural history of the place. So pretty amazing, and it should be a great resource for not just you know, visitors to the area, but people that live here and all the young people that are exposed to that place. They'll have even more resources to really captivate their imagination about the history that occurs there.
Super. And what kind of other, besides educational opportunities, what kind of recreation opportunities will be available at this site?
So the land was originally purchased by BLM in 2000. It was when that was finalized, and it was to guarantee boating access originally, but, you know, access to the river for boating, for fishing. You know, it's got tremendous other resources around, just, you know, related to the natural environment as well. Plus you're right there in the shadow of the historic bridge and all of the history that occurred there. But as far as recreation opportunities, we're you know, going to provide a much better boat ramp that will allow people to access the river a lot better than they've been able to, which is essentially just scamper down the hillside. And now that'll be something that, you know, you can back a vehicle down and unload your boat or pick people up, depending on, you know, whether you're getting in or getting out at that point. And then, you know, just providing some amenities in the form of like shade structures. And like I already mentioned, the toilet, picnic tables, park benches, some of that sort of things to make your stay a little more inhabitable.
Are there any plans for hiking or biking trails?
There's a small interpretive trail associated with that. And then within the area, there's, you know, I don't even know how many miles of primitive two-track roads that, you know, people could, you know, bike or Jeep or whatever all around that area.
It sounds pretty exciting. I can't wait to get down there, but I might wait until the weather is a little warmer and perhaps after the installation of the vault toilet too.
Right, right.
After all, we want that area to be nice for everyone. So what other BLM recreation projects should we know about?
Well, before I leave the Lobatos Bridge project, I will just say that we are, you know, as we develop this project over the course of this year, our goal is to have a commemoration of the area and celebration sometime in September.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
And you'll keep us informed.
So more to follow there.
Excellent. Excellent. All right. So in terms of other recreation projects on the BLM, what's cooking?
Well, we're going to continue with some trail building in the Greeny Mountain area.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, we've got one more approved trail that has yet to be constructed, and so we're finalizing like the designs and approvals and all that kind of stuff. In anticipation of that. And last year, the last couple of years, we've worked with our steady partners of San Luis Valley Great Outdoors Coalition and their action team, which is the field crew that they have out there, and then Volunteers for Outdoor Colorado as well, to orchestrate events. We did one last year on National Trails Day in June, another one in National Public Lands Day in the end of September, and those, you know, bring in people from all over the place to, you know, put a lot of strong backs and hands to work on getting those things built. And that's pretty much how we've been doing it for years now, and it's been a good way of gaining like local interest and there's sweat equity in all of these trails that are around here. So we're doing it ourselves and with these partners, that's how we're getting them implemented.
Yeah, excellent. And as you mentioned, the sweat equity really gives people buy-in on these trails and ensures that they're going to be used for years and years to come.
That's right.
I'm just curious, how much public land exists in the San Luis Valley that is open for public recreation?
Well, valley-wide, you know, and different people will use different states as a reference on how big the place is, you know, whether it's New Hampshire or Vermont or Connecticut or whatever. But, you know, in a landscape of about that size, we have 3.1 million acres of public lands, which is pretty impressive. You know, the largest landowner being the Forest Service. The BLM has, which is that kind of foothills country, you know, that right between, you know, the flat and a lot of the private lands and the upland forested areas is that kind of like that band of foothills around the valley. And that's our field office of the BLM, which is 500,000 acres.
Well, that's pretty significant.
Yeah, and so it's sort of that backyard to back country, as we say, for so many of the communities around here. And that's one of the, you know, great things about, you know, my job is getting to work with all these communities and sort of helping them realize what they want out of their public lands that are right out their backyard.
Yeah, and I think as a member of Trout Unlimited, I was surprised to learn how much fishable water there is actually on the BLM. You don't have to go into the National Forest to get to some good streams for fishing.
Yeah, we don't have, you know, maybe the biggest rivers around here or anything like that. You know, there's certainly other, you know, BLM units that have like lots of, you know, world-class kind of rivers and stuff. But, you know, what we have is definitely interesting and as you said, you know, great fishing opportunities that are fairly close to the communities where people live.
For someone who was new, who's just moved to the San Luis Valley, maybe in the last year or two, if you were asked to recommend three places in the valley for them to go recreate, what would you tell them?
If they're new, you know, I would probably pass on what someone told me the very first time I came here to the valley, which is, have you ever gone to Penitente Canyon? It's just down the road. It's easily accessible. It's, you know, north of Del Norte, a little bit west of La Garita. And Penitente Canyon Recreation Area is one of the places that I feel like, you know, I'm most proud to, you know, have a part in managing. And that place has always just been so amazing. And it's just got a life of its own. It's very soulful. It's just one of the, you know, coolest experiences I think you can have around here. All that area over there by the Penitente and the Natural Arch and all that is some really neat, neat country.
Yeah, and it's not just for climbing. There's excellent hiking out there.
Absolutely. And, you know, at Penitente, there's over 20 miles of single-track trail that's open to up to bicycle as well.
Okay, so that's one place.
That's one. You know, I'll shift. Well, of course, you're going to want to see the sand dunes. You know, maybe that's like we don't even have to go there. It's so obvious.
Yeah. Let's do two more besides the dunes.
That's right. You know, if you've never been to Sawatch Park, on the Sawatch Ranger District, where I started my career here, on the Forest Service, you have to, you know, start in the valley, go over the divide to Gunnison country and then back into the Rio Grande watershed to get there. But it's at the base of the Lagerita Wilderness, just really one of the most kind of incredible landscapes that you'll ever come across, and a really just an amazing, amazing place. I would say that's number two. You know, of course, the river and, you know, the Lobatos Bridge is like that perfect gateway to visiting and really seeing, like, you know, the beginning of the Royal Rio Grande Gorge, you know, which is just this incredible story by itself, you know, its formation and it's kind of the cultural heart of the valley, you know, the Rio. And so, you know, anywhere along the Rio, I think, is something that, you know, so many of the communities are based around and so much of our livelihoods exist by. And And to go out to a place like the Rio Grande Natural Area is just a really, you know, special experience. Beyond that, I'd say, you know, you've got just really incredibly unique experiences all over the place. But, you know, one other place that I'm fortunate I get to play a part in managing is the Zapata Falls Recreation Area.
Which is outstanding.
And it's a really neat area. You know, it's a great campsite. We're actually looking to expand some of the camping there.
Cool.
We've got a lot of picnic sites that aren't really used for that, and people really want more camping opportunity. So it's not like we're looking to get rid of all of our picnic sites there or anything, but converting some of those into better campsites will help a little bit of that, you know, with the growth and recreation and what people actually want out of these places. But Zapata Falls, which is actually on state land board lands, the falls themselves, to have that kind of easy access for such an incredible waterfall is really cool.
Yeah, it's a pretty spectacular spot.
Hey, Sean, I had a quick question for you.
Yeah.
So have you noticed an uptick in campers now that the road to Zapata Falls is completely redone and a lot easier to access?
You know, we estimate that we have about 173,000 visitors to Zapata Falls every year, which is pretty significant. And the amazing thing about the road is, yes, there are more people that are able to get all the way to where they were going, but it was always shocking to me, like, you know, how, I guess the right way to say it is, you know, like, how undeterred people were to actually go up the old road and still go there. So yes, we have seen more because, the capability is there and the road is perfect. So, you know, we're really fortunate to have that.
Yeah. I know the last time I went up was last fall with my, nephew and his wife and their son. And it was the first time we had been on the paved road as opposed to the washboarded road. And man, it was so much easier and more pleasant a drive to get up there. But as you mentioned, we were willing to go regardless of the road condition because it is such a cool place.
Yes.
You mentioned Sawatch Park as a place to go recreate, and that's the very first place that I ever went fly fishing in my life.
Oh, cool.
Was in Sawatch Park decades ago, but it was excellent because there was success to be had for a brand new person fishing. It's what got me convinced to become a fly fisherman. Well, Sean, as of yesterday, or as of Monday, January 20th, MLK Day, we have a new federal administration. Do you guys here at the local level have any sense yet? I know it's really early. Have any sense yet of how the change in administration is going to affect you at the local level?
Not really. You know, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that's already in play and will likely continue to remain in play. You know, what happens at that level is it's hard for me to read the tea leaves there, you know, often. But, you know, I can say that, you know, so many of the things that I see in like the plans that we've, you know, recently received as far as like our BLM REC strategy, the recent passage of the Bipartisan Explore Act, exploring public lands through outdoor recreation experiences, the American Outdoor Recreation Act, which is waiting in the wings still in the Senate. You know, they basically reinforce all the things that we're already doing. And that is, you know, really trying to, you know, meet, you know, rise to the occasion and meet the demands of, you know, the increase in outdoor recreation participation as a result of greater visitation, you know, increasing population in the Rocky Mountains, with you know, trying to improve access, improve the infrastructure to handle, you know, the amount of people that are visiting their public lands these days, and knowing that we can't really do that without, you know, a lot of partnerships, which is what, you know, I would say is what we're known for really in BLM Colorado, is just how many great partnerships that we have. And, you know, we've got the San Luis Valley Great Outdoors Coalition, and we're part of that. And, you know, that's kind of the umbrella organization for all things outdoor recreation and conservation in the San Luis Valley. Having all of those partners and being informed by our communities and being engaged with our communities, I feel like we've got, you know, we're on a good path to be successful regardless of who's running the show, you know, higher levels.
Great. Well, I'm pleased to hear that, because outdoor recreation is such an important part of our physical and mental well-being here in the Valley, as well as an economic engine for the Valley too. Any final thoughts? Anything you'd like to share with our listeners?
You know, we're just trucking along with trying to, you know, get our field season underway once the weather clears and all that sort of thing. So there'll be lots of activity with all of our different disciplines and whatnot. And we've got a lot of youth crews that are already on the hook this year for a lot of great work to be done out in the woods. And so hopefully, like, trying to improve all of that access and understanding of, you know, where people are and the allowable uses and, you know, that kind of thing. And then I think, you know, one thing that we're eagerly waiting to find out is whether or not we'll be doing a resource management plan revision, which is, you know, something that's we're in the pipeline for, but it isn't 100% official yet. Someday we're going to be doing that. And that will be essentially taking the cover off or the lid off of our 30-year-old strategic plan for managing all of the BLM resources here in the San Luis Valley. So we're starting to collect that information and think about, you know, that future planning process, which will engage everyone in the San Luis Valley and beyond. And that'll be a great opportunity for individuals, communities, interest groups to really, like, you know, let their voice be heard as to what they want to see out of, you know, their public lands for, you know, another couple decades at least.
Be sure to keep us informed so that we can advertise the public meetings once this process begins.
Absolutely.
And I do have one more favor to ask, Sean.
Uh-huh.
Whatever it takes, can you try to get some more snow down here on the valley floors, on the BLM lands, as well as the mountains?
I'll do what I can.
All right. Thank you. Well, thank you. We've been talking with Sean Noonan, the Bureau of Land Management Outdoor Recreation Planner for the San Luis Valley Field Office. Thanks very much for joining us, Sean.
Thanks for having me.
And we'll be right back with some outdoor conditions and news after a brief sponsor break.
Hi everyone, this is Hannah Eubanks bringing you another Valley Calendar update with the events happening this week. On Monday, join the Rotary Club meeting at Juanito's around lunch to hear speaker Brett Phillips. On Thursday, Visit Alamosa will have its community listening series at Copper Soul to get community insight on future marketing strategies. Rio Frio Ice Fest is this weekend with an abundance of events. Friday is the packet pickup at Kneeknocker's Bar and Grill. followed by the cross-country Luminaria Ski at BV Pond. Saturday, things ramp up with the Rio Frio 5K. The day is concluded with the Fire and Ice Bonfire. There will be ice carving demonstrations all day in downtown Alamosa, so be sure to enjoy the super cool art making. Sunday will end with the splash at BV Pond. Be brave and take the polar plunge. This year's Rio Frio theme is Welcome to the Jungle, so you know it's going to be a wild time. If you have an event coming up, submit it to the Valley Calendar. All you have to do is head to the Valley Calendar page on alamosacitizen.com, click online form, and give us the details. That's it for now. You're listening to The Valley Pod. Have a wonderful week.
All right, welcome back, folks. The coldest of the cold from this Arctic blast is passing through this week, just in time for the Rio Frio Ice Festival. Sadly, no snow yet in the forecast. January typically brings a few inches of snow, but so far we've had nothing in 2025. AlamosaCitizen.com has been reporting some interesting precipitation levels from 2024. Listen to these whopping figures from the NOAA National Centers for Environmental Information. Alamosa County, 16.75 inches. Canales County, 24.29 inches. Costilla County, 22.53 inches. Mineral County, 32.60 inches. Rio Grande County, 19.66 inches. And Sawatch County, 21.86 inches. Russ Schumacher over at the Colorado Climate Center in Fort Collins took notice of this and added this commentary. It's really unusual for the San Luis Valley to get way more rain than the Northern Front Range through the summer and fall. He noted that Alamosa had almost 4 inches more precipitation than Fort Collins from May through the end of the calendar year. In addition to an extremely wet year, said Schumacher, it was also very warm, tied with 2017 as the warmest year on record in Alamosa. The hotter it is, the thirstier the air is for water from the soils, crops, etc. So the water from the rain that falls doesn't end up having the same benefit for the system as it would if it were cooler. Avalanche danger in the South San Juans is moderate at and above tree line. According to the Colorado Avalanche Information Center, it's becoming harder to trigger a large avalanche that breaks deeper within the snowpack. The most dangerous slopes face northeast and east at upper elevations. Here, winds formed a cohesive layer of stiff snow above weak snow, especially near tree line. Avoid traveling near common trigger points, such as the edges of slopes where the margins of a cohesive slab are the thinnest. Give yourself a wide buffer from convex rollovers, rocky outcrops, and suspect slopes steeper than around 35 degrees. You may not experience any noticeable signs of stability before triggering an avalanche. Be sure to check avalanche.state.co.us for daily avalanche forecasts and observations. Here's a quick look at the local ski areas. Wolf Creek is reporting a 45-inch summit depth and a yearly snowfall total of 115 inches. This week is expected to be mostly sunny. Monarch Mountain is reporting a 47-inch base depth and 128 inches of snow this season. It's also expected to be mostly sunny this week. And Taos Mountain is reporting just 25 inches at their base. Angel Fire Ski Area is reporting 21 inches of base snow and 67 inches for their season total. Over the weekend, a National Weather Service station picked up a temperature reading of minus 34 degrees near Lake George, east of Colorado Springs. And so far, that's been the coldest area of Colorado. Now some news. The United States Department of Interior and Bureau of Reclamation announced a $24.97 million award to support water conservation and habitat restoration efforts in the headwaters of the Rio Grande. Out of the award comes funding for a variety of projects in the valley, as well as projects for the middle Rio Grande in New Mexico. Overall, $18 million will go towards the Rio Grande Basin projects in Colorado, $7 million for the Rio Grande efforts in New Mexico. For the valley, those projects will include the Alamosa Riverfront Restoration Project, Rio Grande Reservoir Low Flow Valve, Pine River Wemenooch Pass Ditch Turnback Structure, Lower Caneos River Restoration Project, Platoro Reservoir Restoration, and Wildfire Risk Mitigation Project Phase 1, Sawatch Creek Multi-Benefit Restoration at Upper Crossing Station, and the Rio Grande Confluence Restoration Project, among others. Colorado Parks and Wildlife concluded the second gray wolf translocation this past weekend with the introduction of 15 wolves from British Columbia, Canada. The 15 wolves, 7 males and 8 females, were evaluated and collared in Canada, then transported by plane and released in Eagle and Pitkin counties over the course of a 6-day operation. The adult female and 4 pups of the Copper Creek pack were also re-released into the wild with GPS collars. The Copper Creek pack were captured and relocated in late August after they were suspected on preying on livestock in Grand County. Now with collars, CPW can keep a closer eye on them. And now some upcoming outdoor events. It is Rio Frio Week. Alamosa's annual Festival of Ice is set for January 24th through 26th, 2025. All weekend long, the Rio Frio Ice Fest will have plenty of reasons to get outside. To see a full list of the weekend's events or to register for the race, go to rioraces.com. The Southern Rocky Mountain Ag Conference is February 4th through February 6th from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Sky High Event Center in Monte Vista. The Ag Conference's theme this year is all about holding ground, securing the future of water, land, businesses, and families. A lineup of speakers will address the most pressing issues facing ag producers. Matt Huber, Colorado Avalanche Information Center forecaster, is back hosting this month's Rio Grande Forest Specialist Series on avalanche conditions. Huber has worked with the CAIC since 2018. Currently, he's focusing on highway avalanche safety on the southeast side of the San Juan Mountains. Presented in partnership with the San Juan Mountains Association, the online program will be held on Wednesday, January 22nd at 5 p.m. Visit the Rio Grande National Forest website or the Facebook page for event information. Colorado Trout Unlimited will host the annual River Conservation and Fly Fishing Camp for teens aged 14 through 16 at AEI Base Camp, Almont, Colorado, from June 8th through 14th, 2025. The San Luis Valley Trout Unlimited chapter is proud to sponsor 2 scholarships for local youth to attend this unique camp that covers registration fees and tuition costs. The week-long program blends STEM-based conservation education with hands-on fly fishing instruction. The program also introduces campers to the complexities of water management in the West and the balance between conservation and recreation. For more information or to apply, contact the SLV Trout Unlimited Education Coordinator, Kevin Melder, at slvtroutunlimited@gmail.com. Kevin will provide details and a link to the application. Well, that ends this episode of the Outdoor Citizen Podcast. Next time, we'll be sending dispatches back from the Southern Rocky Mountain Ag Conference. If you see us, please stop by. The Outdoor Citizen is supported by SLV Great Outdoors and is produced and very capably edited by Owen Woods. If you have an outdoor adventure you'd like to share, or if there are topics you'd like to hear about in a future episode, send an email to info@alamosacitizen.com. And as always, we want to thank Don Richmond for his song Sea Turtle and Daniel Boyce for the sounds of the valley's bird. Until next time, this has been Marty Jones. Stay warm out there and get outside. We'll see you at the Rio Frio.